Okay, so we're not going to talk about what we were talking about before we get on the air because we don't want to lose our audience or potentially be arrested.
I don't think we could get arrested for what we were talking about.
It depends on the... I guess maybe not arrested, but scolded
harshly.
Some
of it is very sensitive material.
Sensitive material, not appropriate for young ears, not appropriate for a lot of ears.
Look, I like sensitive material. I'm a sensitive guy.
Me too. I'm the female in the relationship.
Wait, I thought I was the female. Does that make us lesbians?
That was the best opening ever. Okay. Welcome to episode 32 of Foul Territory. I'm John Sumple. This is Jed Rigney.
Hello.
And we were just laughing hysterically at that cold open. That was totally unplanned, which most of them are, but that one was quite funny.
I would say we never planned the cold open.
No, I think we did early on, and it was kind of forced, and it was just kind of like, just make something up, start a conversation.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's just totally nonsense, but it's...
Now we're just a couple of gals, you know,
just
want to talk about some baseball.
Yeah, I've got my cup of tea by me. I've got Pop Sugar open on my cell phone. I'm ready. Does anybody call them cell phones anymore?
Yeah, I think they still do.
Do they?
I mean, you can't call them a mobile anymore.
No, mobiles, that's a European thing, isn't it? That's not a...
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody calls them mobiles. Smartphone.
Yeah.
Handheld.
I think people just call them phones still.
Phones. Yeah, my phone's right here.
Wait a minute, I think the cops might actually be coming.
Oh, good Lord. Run.
Hey, it's just another day in the NYC, man.
Yeah, and it's early here. This is our first morning taping for me, 8:30 in the morning, 11:30 for you. But had to get up early, the cup of coffee, showered, ready to go, feeling fresh.
You're going to have a very productive day, John.
I'm excited for you. I feel like it. Let's jump into some headlines.
Let's get this garbage out of the way.
Okay, we've got a whole bunch of stuff to talk about, as we've been talking for the last few weeks, that we're deep into trade season. In fact,
season has really become like the all-star game till the end of July now, right? It's really a great time for baseball fans, and especially like for us to talk about stuff. I mean, normally we'd be talking about like, oh, hey, did you see Chris Bryant got kicked out of his first game ever? No one cares. It'll be so far down the list. But a week from now, past the deadline, might be number three on the list.
Yes, right.
But we don't care about him. Well, we do. I mean, he's a great player and all that. But we don't care about him getting tossed out of his first game. Let's talk about the trades. Let's talk about what's happening. Let's talk about what's going to happen.
So as we were talking in the last episode, we were talking about a whole bunch of trades and then the trades that were going to happen for the Red Sox. And then I'm not kidding, minutes after we ended the episode, there was a big trade between the Yankees and the White Sox.
You mean minutes after we both boldly proclaimed that Todd Frazier was just going to go to the Red Sox because there was nowhere else for him to go?
Correct.
And then the Yankees traded for him? In what many people think was a move to stop the Red Sox from getting him?
It was,
because they didn't really need a mediocre third baseman. They already have one. Chase Headley.
Right. So, but Frazier's been playing a little bit of first base, too, hasn't he?
Yankees. You know, I haven't really been checking the box scores. I was just so confused by the move. I mean, they do need a first baseman, and they might be doing like a... they might wind up with sort of a stretch run where they're sort of platooning, right? Mm-hmm. So you have Frazier versus the lefties... Headley doesn't do well against lefties. He does well against righties. So maybe you could sort of get a first baseman and
Yankees aren't
there's rumors for them getting Sonny Gray and Yonder Alonso from the A's.
Yeah, I find it interesting with these package deals because we had the one with the Nationals.
Yeah.
Picking up the
which we talked about because it had happened before we started recording.
Right. So we had that, then this one, and the potential packaging of Alonso and Sonny Gray has been talked about as well. There was some talk about Phelps and Ramos being a package deal, but Phelps went to the Mariners.
Yeah.
And which I still am a little perplexed by the whole Ramos scenario, because now he's a hot commodity and he's not that great. So,
right, gives a few too many walks to be like a hot commodity, and yet I feel like there are better pitchers available that you could get for cheaper. But
a dozen teams are in on him, so it's going to be a crazy next, you know, four or five days for sure.
Yeah, no, half of what we say in this podcast will be obsolete.
Oh,
in 3 days.
Yeah, and maybe by the time we finish this call or finish this session, we'll see the headlines that some other trades have happened. So I mentioned that, you know,
I'm unsatisfied with calling this a call, and I'm also unsatisfied with calling this a session. We'll have to figure out some other
podcast. How about podcast? Yeah,
recording? I don't know. Convo. I almost rather call it a convo, because a couple of gals having a convo,
right?
Sipping their coffees.
Oh boy,
I have chai lattes.
I have herbal tea.
Oh, okay. That's much more massive.
There was another tandem trade, and I just completely forgot about that. Trevor Cahill and
Royals.
To the Royals. So that the Royals all of a sudden went from insignificant to all in.
Well, they had that big surge before the All-Star break. Mm-hmm. Then the Dodgers dropped a poop on their head, and then they started winning again once they were no longer playing.
Six in a row or something. I don't know how they did last.
Good teams, and they're kind of in that weak AL wild card hunt and kind of in the weak division race with the, I mean, I say kind of, but they're like a couple of games out. That's close enough.
They're the second wild card team right now. They're in.
Oh, are they?
If the season ended today, they're in.
Oh, well, that's crazy. How weird that wild card race is. Last time I checked was 2 days ago, and they were a couple.
No, because everybody's in. The only team that's out is the White Sox. Everybody else has still got a shot.
And the A's.
Yeah. Well, yeah, mathematically they all do, but they're done. Especially if the A's, especially as if they still had a shot. But when they start to dump even more payroll and superstars, they'll be. But they're going young, which is kind of cool. I kind of like that when they've done that several times over the last 15, 20 years, and it always creates some excitement. It takes 2 or 3 years to get there, but then all of a sudden they're competitive.
I actually didn't like this trade for the Royals, by the way. Cahill strikes me as the sort that, like, I remember calling this a couple years ago when Ryan Dempster was traded. Mm-hmm. He was doing really well for the Cubs. He was doing really well in the Cubs, and they traded him, I think, to the Rangers. Why I remembered that, and I can't remember what I had for breakfast. So he was traded to the Rangers, and it was just like, no, he's going to get blown up. And he got blown up. And I feel like Cahill's a little bit smoke and mirrors, and I think he's going to go to the Royals and get blown up.
Yeah, and I think it's A.J. Preller should be commended for selling him at his highest value.
Yeah, and dumping Brandon Maurer, developing value in Brandon Maurer.
Brandon Maurer,
Brandon Maurer. And getting, you know, not a great return, but Matt Strom could be a really good starter and at worst is a very good reliever. Mm-hmm. And then they got some 18-year-old kid who's one of those lottery ticket type guys that could be, you know, something in the future. Could be like a rich man's Everth Cabrera for the Padres. Who knows, you know? But like for what they gave up, which was very little, that's a nice return for the Padres. And the Padres are building this thing. You know, Preller's obviously a scammer based on, like, empirically so. This isn't just my opinion. The guy has two sets of books on medical records. He's already screwed over, I think, three teams in the league. There's still 26 other teams to deal with, and one of them is now the Royals. We'll see how that trade goes. We'll see what was wrong with one of these guys. But I didn't like the trade for the Royals very much. I mean, it's safe-ish, but you're actually giving up pieces.
But the thing about the Royals, though, is that when they've done that in the past, like Chris Young, for example, like, he comes out and dominates for two seasons when you never thought that – you thought his career was over after he was with the Mets.
And but that's because they made an adjustment on him. Yeah. And so Cahill's coming in already outperforming his
maybe
expectations.
They'll adjust him, tweak him even a little better.
Sure.
I'm looking for the positives.
They're going to take someone who
is mediocre,
who's outperforming his expectations, and they're going to tweak him and make him outperform his outperformance?
I think that's a possibility.
John, it's way too early for you.
They're Yosting.
This is the last podcast we do this early. This is the last call we do.
They're going to Yost him. They're going to Yost him up to another notch.
So they're going to have him bunt.
Yes. Yes. That's good. So then last night, as I'm watching the Mariners-Red Sox game that didn't get over until 3 a.m. your time.
Yes.
There was no talk whatsoever during the game of the trade, although the trade was going down.
Yeah.
And so I had been flipping back and forth between MLB Network and the Mariners game, and I flip over at one point, and they're talking about Eduardo Nunez being traded to the Red Sox. And they're showing him in the dugout, hugs, and it reminds
right.
me. Ryan,
they pulled him out of the
and
out
he
of the
didn't
game
cry.
The game.
He didn't cry. There was no tears.
Well, that's because he doesn't really give a crap about those guys. He's just been there for less than a year.
Right, but it's like Flores when he had the, what, 2-3 years ago when he heard that he had been traded and he was in tears.
And then they put him out on the field again.
They put him back out there like, oops, sorry, it didn't happen. It's like, horrible, horrible.
It's so terrible.
But that's
obviously
the age
I'm
we
laughing
live in.
Because it was terrible.
That's the age we live in, though, is that, you know, the players are going to find out from a fan sitting in the first row before they find out from the team because of social media.
Yeah.
But it was, yeah, it was
a virus, man.
And having a chance, and we talked a little bit before the show, texted back and forth a little bit about Devers and what his response would be because they just brought him up and he played in his first game was last night, right?
Right. This is also one of the big stories this week. Top three prospect, top five prospect in all of baseball, Rafael Devers called up by the Red Sox to play third base because third base has been a -1 win above replacement. So they're calling up the replacement, who will hopefully at least bring it back to zero. He's been killing the ball in Double A, went to Triple A, and basically hit .500 for a week. And then they called him up because they didn't get Todd Frazier.
Right. Damn those Yankees.
And before he could finish playing his first game, the Red Sox traded for someone who presumably will play some at third base, though he also can spell Bogarts at short. Eduardo Nunez can play shortstop and some outfield. So the team has some weaknesses that Eduardo Nunez, as kind of mediocre as he is probably a good fit, and they didn't really give up much to get him.
Right. Watching him last night in the game, too, I was impressed that he looked like he belonged for a 21-year-old. That's always a good
20,
thing.
20, John.
20. 20 years
old. 20 years old.
Looked like he
remember what you were doing when you were 20? You were not playing Major League Baseball for the Boston Red Sox, I can tell you that.
And he made some really good plays. Got a great arm. That was very apparent on one play that was kind of a short chopper in the infield. Played it perfectly and, you know, just threw a laser across the diamond and got the, I don't remember who hit it, but it was out by three steps. It was pretty impressive. He walked a couple times, so he's definitely got the selective eye.
Yeah.
I don't think
he got a hit, but I think the walks are a great indicator for a young player.
Yeah, yeah. So it's interesting because I think the Red Sox conundrum right now is that there's a lack of power, there's a lack of inconsistency in a couple of positions, and that's about it. You know, they're one of those teams that you kind of scratch your head when you look at their roster, like these guys should be 10 games up. So they've been having this kind of ebb and flow where they surge and then they regress. Then they surge and then they regress. And they're going through a little bit of a regression. Four in a row.
And they had that first month, right, where just everything went wrong. And
everyone was sick.
And it was they should be much further ahead than they are. I still think they'll win the division, but this team is not – like, Betts is not hitting like he was. I don't think he should be leading off. I think that's a – I think you put Benintendi and Pedroia up there, depending on lefty-righty, and let Betts knock some people in. Had him third, but I don't know why. John Farrell, he won a World Series, God bless him. But I don't – some of the stuff he does, I don't quite understand. And maybe Mookie Betts says he feels better leading off or whatever, but it's just such a weird place to put such a good hitter. Because it's a different mandate, you know, when you go up to bat first. Like,
yeah. It's a different mentality. Do they have a clubhouse guy? Who's their rock? Who's their David Ross in the clubhouse?
I mean, I don't think they have that. I think they do miss David Ortiz in that regard. But also, I think they're also doing something this year, which, you know, fans can't get behind, really, but you kind of understand, is they're trying to stay under the luxury tax threshold. And they're getting Nunez. They're still under. And apparently there's a little room for, like, a reliever. But they can't go out and get like a huge bat to take over first base DH with, you know, Mitch Moreland, because they just can't. If they get a dollar over that luxury tax thing, then it just it screws up the team for 3 years mm-hmm. financially. And these teams are trying to make money. They want to win, but they're trying to make money.
Yeah, so watch after this show, they're going to make a blockbuster trade.
I know, right? But I think they're really concerned about that luxury tax threshold.
And I think that's smart. I like to hear that. I like to hear about, I mean, even, you know, as tough as small market teams have it, when you have somebody like Bean who says, this is what I got to work with, I got to make the best of it. And then you have somebody like Loria who doesn't care and just throws money and it doesn't work and he gets mad and has a temper tantrum. You know, I like that whole idea of having a responsible team because, you know, the Red Sox are built for success for years to come.
Yeah.
You know, that mentality, they've resurrected the franchise and from a business perspective. The fan base is bigger than it's ever been. It's amazing to me, like when the Red Sox won and then the Cubs won, how there are now Red Sox and Cubs fans everywhere that I never knew existed. It's crazy.
Yeah, and I think when you look at the actual probability of winning World Series is to mortgage your future, to spend, because I think in the Red Sox case, if they go over the limit, it winds up costing them over the next 3 years something like $100 million. Mm-hmm. Like it's sizable. Like it's not like, oh, well, we saved ourselves $2 million by not going over the limit. So I think, you know, they're probably thinking, like, look, we have a really good team. All the people on this team that they would want for next season, they have for next season. Mm-hmm. And most of them they have for the next season after that.
Right. And the young players are locked in. They're controllable yeah. for 4 or 5 seasons. So
yeah.
they're good.
Yeah. And they have, you know, again, they have Devers coming. They have a couple other minor leaguers. Their farm system is a bit depleted because Dombrowski is traded for, you know, Kimbrel. And Sale, of course, right. cost them quite a bit. But, you know, they're picking up good players in the draft. And they're I like what they're doing, but I sure would like to see the team hit for more power mm-hmm. and getting a first baseman slash DH that could, you know, I don't want to say platoon with Ramirez, but sort of take turns with Ramirez so he could play some first or whatever. That's probably the only place you're adding to this team because you can't, like, well, Benintendi is Benintendi. He's not hitting, you know, 30 home runs, but he gets on base a lot. Mm-hmm. So, all right, so we're an on-base team. Okay, good. And the pitching's great. I think they're top three in the American League in pitching, starters and relievers. It's in a pretty hitter-friendly park, so that's good. I think all they really need right now is another reliever because, you know, they've traded for relievers in the past, Carson Smith and Tyler mm-hmm. Thornburg, and both of them have crapped out. They gave up who did they give up for Tyler Thornburg? The the third baseman at that they would love to have back, I guess. For the Brewers now. Can't remember his name. How quickly they forget, John.
But the
he's dead to me, John. He's dead.
Watching the game last night, there was definitely some frustration expressed after the game. You had they went up in the 13th inning. And then the Mariners came back on a wild pitch to tie the game in the bottom of the 13th.
Doug Fister.
I wouldn't say it was a wild pitch. I think that was poorly played by the catcher. If you watch the replay, it's just, I mean, unless there was a confusion in what he was throwing because the catcher didn't even get his glove turned around. It was kind of like trying to backhand a fastball that wasn't outside. That was kind of a weird play. But it was one of those things where you're like, when you look at it, if I'm the pitcher, I'm pissed off at the catcher. And if you're out in the field, you're pissed off at the players are pissed off at the pitcher.
Yeah.
So it was one of those games where they should have won but didn't. So they have to have their stopper today shut down the losing streak and get them back on their winning ways. This is a big game, I think, for them right now. Not that, you know, games at the end of July are super meaningful, but this is an opportunity to kind of like, okay, we've got that losing streak behind us. Let's move forward.
Well, Chris Sale's the guy to do it, you know, like that's, and against the Mariners who have trouble with lefties, it should be.
It's an afternoon game.
It should probably be one or two runs
going.
Is all you need to win. So
it's an afternoon game too. So I was thinking about, maybe I should sneak over there to catch the game today.
For an afternoon delight.
So that should wrap up this week in Red Sox baseball. And
you know what, John? We could just switch this over to all Red Sox, man. You want to talk about their minor leagues? You want to talk about their history?
Right.
I'm in. We'll do it. I know everyone loves the Red Sox, so why not? Well, they are a first place team, John. To be fair, they're in first place.
So let's talk about it's worth talking about teams that are having things going on. They had a lot going on this week, so.
Yeah. So we'll see. I don't think they're going to do much else besides get a reliever. Maybe getting like a setup guy. I don't think they're going to go all in on like Brad Hand, because apparently the Padres are asking for a fortune for him, but he's going to get traded. Everyone's getting traded. You see the White Sox traded another reliever away?
Who did they trade?
They traded Swarzak to the Brewers.
Oh, I didn't even see that one.
Yeah. This is crazy. Look, I'm all for trading away assets, but you're just trading away everything now. Like, yeah. You need to field the team.
Yeah, that's...
This is a bit much. I was surprised they traded Conley, like, in the Robertson-Frazier trade, like, hey, guys, you actually still need to have a team.
Right. Well, it seems like they're burning it to the ground.
Yeah, but then there's Jose Abreu still on the team.
Right.
Poor guy.
Yeah. I mean, that's always tough when teams decide to do that and you still have your... there's certain players that just like the playing for the same team. They're going to stay through thick and thin, or their contract was, a bad contract as far as the franchise is concerned, but good for them. So they're not going in. Like Joey Votto. Joey Votto makes it sound like he loves being in Cincinnati. Why? Because he's paying.
Yeah, first
paying
of all,
huge
A,
money.
It's Cincinnati.
Right. They're not competitive.
I just mean the town.
No, I know. So that was one. Yeah. Two, they're not competitive.
They're not. It's Cincinnati. B, it's, the team is not very good.
But there is that Skyline Chili. It could be the Skyline Chili.
And the thing is, and the thing is, in the future, they don't have much coming.
No.
Like, they have a nice third baseman, and they have the guy they drafted this year. Is it Hunter Green? Looks like he could be something special.
Well, all you need to know
is that
Brandon Phillips was thrilled to be traded away to the Braves.
Yes, so. Brandon Phillips, who kept blocking trades.
Right. So like,
and at a certain point, it got through his thick skull that, hey, maybe I should just get out of here.
Maybe I should go to another shitty team, and then I'll be happier. So let's move on to, we've got some more, plenty more going on here. You have a note here, Nationals running out of outfielders. What's going on there?
Okay, so Jason Wirth is injured. Michael Taylor is injured. The guy whose name I can never remember is injured. What's his name again?
Trey Turner?
No, the other guy.
Another guy?
No, the guy, he was on your team. Eaton?
Oh, Adam Eaton.
Adam Eaton?
Yeah, that guy.
I don't know why I can't remember that guy's name. Adam Eaton, he's injured. So they got, so they have Goodwin and Harper in the outfield. So they're having to put Wilmer Defoe out there in the outfield. Like, they don't have anything at AAA that's ready to come up, which I think is a failing of the organization as well. Yeah. I think you should always have some quad A outfielder, like a Michael Saunders
whatever. It's not like you don't have 50 of them in your system.
Yeah, but you should, in the offseason, if you're a team in contention, you should put someone in AAA who could come up if needed. So they're
like the Cubs
having
the
to
Cubs
mess around with
15 different top prospects, or at least a couple years ago, it seemed like they had too many outfield prospects.
Yeah. Well, that the
catchers made the outfielder prospect.
The Nationals do have two of the top 15 outfield prospects,
but they're not ready.
But they're just not ready. I mean, Juan Soto is still 18 or 19. And Victor Robles is close, but he's more like mid-next year, maybe.
He's double-A, right?
I think he's double-A. Yeah. I think they might have just pushed him to triple-A because they had to bring up someone from triple-A to fill this problem. And it feels like, well, wait a minute. Why didn't they go get J.D. Martinez?
Mm-hmm.
The Diamondbacks got J.D. Martinez for nothing.
Nothing, right.
I mean, I'm sure the problem is, right, like, people are complaining it's a fleecing and the Diamondbacks stole him and... But it could just be that no one really needed an outfielder. But you look at the Nationals and maybe they just didn't want to bring in the salary or something. But it's a little strange. It's a little strange.
But they did shore up their bullpen a little bit. And they actually have gotten a few saves out of the Doolittle-Madsen tandem.
Yes, a good move by them.
Yeah, Dusty Baker better not screw that up. I'm not going to hold my breath.
I think when they came over, they were saying, oh, Ryan Madsen's going to be the closer. And then immediately the
first game
just
Doolittle
turned on
gets
that.
A save.
Yeah,
Ryan sets him
and then,
up.
Then
sets
Baker
him up.
Said afterwards that Madsen says he's more comfortable pitching the eighth, and we know that. You and I have talked about that.
Yeah, But that's not something you want your manager going out saying either.
But why did the Nationals not know that?
They found out after they got there.
Like, how did they find? Like, I knew that before the trade.
Boy.
I'm not an A's fan. It's not like I'm following the beat and I'm trying to keep up with everything about the A's. But everyone kind of knows that Ryan Madsen doesn't like pitching the ninth. Well, he likes the eighth.
What was it back, what, 4 or 5 years ago when he was with the Phillies and he was dominant? He was the post-Papelbon closer?
Oof.
That was a long time ago.
Wait, he was the pre-Papelbon.
Pre or post?
Pre.
No, in Philly.
Yeah.
He was before Papelbon in Philly?
Yeah.
No, I thought he was after.
Sorry, old man.
Gosh.
You're getting your timelines mixed up.
Screwed up. But he was dominant, though.
Though, to be fair, listeners, John is not a Phillies fan.
No, not a Phillies fan. Not a
Red Sox
fan.
Had like two seasons where he was basically unhittable.
Yeah.
And then I think he had a shoulder thing.
And then a confidence thing when he was with the A's, too, because he got rocked quite a bit when he first went there.
But and then he kind of just settled into the eighth. Yeah. He likes the eighth.
Yeah. Occasional saves.
But Doolittle's great. I mean, he's got a walks, hits, divided by innings pitch of like 0.7.
And he's got one of the best beards in the game.
Great beard.
Fiery red beard.
Yeah. Good look. He is lefty, which is unusual for a closer, but it does work sometimes. So.
Speaking of lefties.
Oh, okay.
The big one went down this week.
Oh, yes.
And that killed me because the trade deadline in fantasy baseball is upon us. And
okay,
that just,
so Clayton Kershaw, the best pitcher in baseball.
Unbelievable.
Lower back problems. Not the same as last year, apparently.
Apparently.
But they think he's going to be out 4 to 6 weeks. And again, that might be that long because there's an 11-game lead in the division. And they're guaranteed a playoff spot. So maybe they're just thinking, well, we'll just give him all the weeks he needs so he's 100% by the playoffs. But for the biggest loss here, because the Dodgers, whatever, they'll just pick up a pitcher like Yu Darvish or bring up a minor leaguer, whatever. But the big news here is for fantasy baseball teams. If you were in contention and you were going to ride Kershaw all the way to the end, as I was planning on doing in one of my leagues, you got to change your plans. What did I do? I traded Kershaw. I traded Kershaw for a package of performing players and future prospects. And we'll see. Hopefully that will be enough to get me to the championship. Then there's guys like you
so
who have him in a keeper league. And he does have some keeper value.
Yeah.
But now no one's going to try to trade for him to make a... Because you're not in contention.
No.
In the league that you and I are together.
I am not.
And so... Your plan was to trade him for a nice piece.
Nice pieces, and that was my expectation. But unfortunately, our league, and sorry for the guys in our league that listen to this, there's not a lot of people that are willing to trade value. I mean, there's a lot of smaller transactions, but some people who are willing to go out and make some bigger trades. But most of the offers that I've received are one-sided, and it's like, there's two people in this trade scenario, and I'm one of them, and let's talk value.
Well, I will say one thing about our league. I do like the league that we're in, but I would say that there is a misevaluation of player value. I know that's a little redundant, but there's not a complete understanding of player value that happens, I don't want to say throughout the league, but with a lot of guys. And so you get players having, this person is worth this, but no, he's only worth this to me.
Right.
And whereas in baseball, it's a little bit more like, well, no, this is considered one of the best players and look at his contract.
Right. The contract is the big part. I think a lot of the transactions that we have, people aren't looking at the contracts.
Yeah.
The dollar value and the long-term or potential or already signed to a long-term contract and what that means. So, trading somebody who is already established on a long-term contract who's up in age isn't going to have as much value as somebody who is younger at $2 that you're going to be able to hold on to for 5 seasons if you want them. And sometimes people are thinking that that's an even trade, and it's not. If you're looking just at statistics,
I think that
it
the
might
league
be.
In general doesn't understand surplus value, where you say, I have a player that is worth And I'm all apologies to people who don't follow fantasy baseball or anything like that.
Or our league.
Or who do follow fantasy baseball, but don't follow complex keeper leagues with, minor leagues and contracts and whatever. But if you take a player who would be at auction worth $20 and you have him available for $5, that is a $15 surplus. And what that surplus allows you to do is then pick up another player. So you have one player for $5 who is a $20 value. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I've been winning this league as much as I have, and this year I have a 20-point lead in first place, and that's 20 points out of 120, not...
Right.
Wait, is it 120? Yeah, it's 120.
Right.
So it's not 20 out of like 11,000.
Right.
So I have a 20-point lead out of 120, and it's because every year I look at, and every time I do a trade, I look at what's the value I'm getting. Not is the player better than the other player, because sometimes you make a trade and I'm like, yeah, I'm giving up this better player, but look at the value I'm getting in return. Mm-hmm. And look at what, if I give up a $40 player who's worth $40 and I get a player who's a $20 player, yeah, he's half as good. But if that $20 player only costs me $5, then I have that $15 more dollars for me to spend. Not to mention the other $20 I saved in the trade.
There you have it.
So it's what can I then do with all that surplus value, and that's why I have a 20-point lead, and I will forever, he said.
Well, but you know, you're giving away secrets, so maybe everybody will take your advice and kind of.
They won't. Everyone runs fantasy baseball teams the way they think they should. Yeah, I'm in a league right now, John. Look, this is a fantasy baseball corner here on Foul Territory. I'm in another league. This is a money league. And there's a guy in this league who, there's an innings cap in this league. You get 1,600 innings, and that's it. Right? No more pitchers beyond that. I have a guy who yesterday hit the cap. And I've been warning. I'm competing against this guy for money. Right? And I felt so bad for him a month ago. I started warning him, like, hey, just keep an eye on that, those pitching innings. You're going to hit the cap soon. Sure enough, 2 months before the end of the season, the guy
does he have an insurmountable lead in some of the counting statistics or no?
No. That's the thing.
That didn't work. That strategy didn't work.
No, it won't work at all. And yes, it does push him higher in the standings for now. And there is, I will say, in leagues, sometimes there is a sort of psychological value to that. This is like a whole other aside where, like, well, if you look like you're higher, then people will be less likely to want to trade to try to catch you. Mm-hmm. So I have employed that system in another league, and it's done quite well for me, where people are like, well, he's going to win, so why should I trade?
Right. Well, I find it interesting that some of the conversations that I've had over the years when I've been playing with people who are in position to win money won't trade with you to improve their team.
Yeah.
I don't understand that. Like, I'm out, but there are people who are in a position to win some money, but yet they're not interested in some of the trade offers. And I usually go from the value perspective as opposed to statistics. And I think a lot of people look to make trades on statistical value as opposed to contract combination of contract and statistical value. So it's definitely makes for an interesting, and I have only, yeah, there's a couple of different trade scenarios that I've looked at, and you know, as far as who needs what and what I have to give and what they have to give me back in return, which is primarily draft picks and prospects, is what I'm looking for, isn't too sexy for me.
Yeah.
So it creates a little bit of a scenario, and I'm not a huge trader. I know there are certain people who love to trade; they love the whole idea of the.
John, you're the only one in our league who hasn't traded yet.
Yeah, I know. Well, some people made trades this week because they had to. You know, you kind of gave them the mandate, and I'm like, really? I'll go out and trade somebody who's on the DL for somebody who's on the DL, and then I'll have my transaction. But I'm
would you though? Would you even be able to pull that off, John? I have my doubts.
Oh, it's not like I haven't tried. And the outreach that I've done, even early in the season, I had a whole bunch of conversations, and it was like, oh, no, I'm going to hold on for a while. I'm going to wait. I'm going to see how things play out. You know, and we have players in our league who have what I would consider insurmountable leads in certain categories that won't be willing to give up that surplus. It's right. Like, why would you want to? You have other areas where you have tremendous opportunity to improve. Get yes. rid of the players that you have in the areas where you're dominant and yes. balance your team out. It's a little
baffling. I and my 20-point lead respect their decisions not to make moves.
Right, right. Do you want Clayton Kershaw?
I don't need Clayton Kershaw, thanks.
I think you're good.
I'm set at pitching.
Okay, so now we'll move away from
So back to Clayton Kershaw, though. It brings up an interesting point for fantasy baseball people because 4 to 6 weeks is kind of a big deal. And, you know, obviously the Dodgers want him back for the playoffs, but will he be back in time to help a fantasy baseball team? I don't know. So if you're in contention, maybe the best – if you're in a keeper league, you trade him off and make the move. Because you know what? Flags fly forever.
Right.
What's next, John?
Let's see what else we
– By the way, feel free to edit all of that out.
No, it's all good stuff.
Kershaw hit the deal.
No, all good stuff. We could keep talking about it because I think it's – you know, really with Kershaw, it's more a matter of how many turns is he going to miss. He's still going to get probably 6 more starts after he comes back. And he has a chance of win 5. He'll definitely help in whip and ERA. So there's, you know, even for somebody who's in a hunt for a money spot, there's value there if they truly see it that way. But right now, most people are like, he's not worth anything because he's hurt. Moving on. So we've covered the Red Sox Nation. We've covered the fantasy baseball corner. Now we're going to move on to As the Mets Turn.
This is my favorite segment on the news. There's always something weird going on with the Mets. It's the Big Apple, but it's not really because it's Queens. And as you would expect, it's just a little bit off things over in Flushing. I think they're in
Flushing Meadows. Yes.
Okay, so there's reports the team is their top prospect is Ahmed Rosario, great shortstop, minor leaguer, hitting well, very good defender. They technically could use a performer like that on the Mets and certainly bring him up, give him a little seasoning so he's ready to go for next season. But apparently there's reports that they're keeping him away from the clubhouse because the environment is toxic with Asdrubal Cabrera demanding to be traded because he didn't want to play second base and then claiming a week later that was old news and no longer his...
It didn't turn out too good for him.
Like, wait, old news, it was a week ago, my friend. Right. I'm not sure if you understand how things work. Anyway, so now he's being moved to third base some, and so you have basically 3 shortstops in the mix here, right? You have Jose Reyes, who isn't very good at much of anything, who is a domestic violencer. Then you have Asdrubal Cabrera, who's demanding to be traded. You have an outfield situation where you have 4 outfielders for 3 spots. 3 of the spots are left-handed hitters, so you can't mix it up with, you know, different platoon situations. It's a very strange, and plus everyone just keeps getting injured. So the report is they don't want to bring Rosario up into this sort of weird environment until they can get some stability, maybe get a couple players back from injury, or maybe just have the year end and get rid of Cabrera and get rid of Jose Reyes and just kind of start with a clean slate. I don't know how much this sort of stuff affects a player's development. I think the move is to bring him up, right? Like, he's good. Mm-hmm. Give him the seasoning he needs. If he's affected by all this stuff, then, I mean, I don't know. Are there computer, you know, are there statistics on whether this is a thing? Toxic clubhouses affect development of player, physical development of player? I don't know.
And I would think, too, that if you're the mindset of the minor leaguer coming up is that I'm going to be the one who makes a change. I'm going to be the one who affects the clubhouse positively. So, you know, maybe they get up there. I mean, it's not like you're a 9-to-5er, you know, making $40,000 a year where you need the job because you need to pay your bills, you know, and you're kind of gutted out because that's the way it is. You know, baseball players can move. They can be on other teams at the drop of a hat. And, you know, from season to season, things are going to change. So they bring them up and things are toxic through the end of the year. Is it going to be toxic next year? Probably not. So what is he going to be damaged goods after being exposed to that environment for a couple of months? I would say no. Unless he's fragile.
Right, and then isn't that sort of an insult to him that like this guy's masculinity is so fragile?
Right, that we can't
right?
handle.
Isn't that one of the hashtags?
We can't handle it.
Masculinity so fragile.
yeah, hashtag fragile masculinity.
Yeah,
there you go. Yeah. As the Mets turn. So
I'm kind of a fan, right? Because I live here, and I don't want to be like one of those guys.
Yeah, but New York media, you can't miss it. It's on television. It's on the radio. It's definitely in the newspapers. I've been to three games
this year. Like it's a fun stadium, and you know, good fans.
So how many Yankee games have you been to?
Zero.
Even when the Red Sox are
I'm not putting any money in those people's pockets.
Yeah, they got plenty. But I did see the Yankees and the Red Sox play back. I don't know if we've talked about this before. Back in the mid, it was probably 86 time frame. Came up from Florida. Parents picked me up at the airport. Went to a Yankees game, and it was Clemens was starting, and the Red Sox went up 9-0 behind Clemens, and it was like 9-0 after four innings. Yankees won 10-9.
Oh,
it was a crazy.
Well, you know
game.
What? Since we're talking about painful memories, let's talk about Mariano Rivera blowing a save against the Red Sox in Game 4 in the League Championship Series in 2004. You know what? I'm healing my wound right now, John. They were up 3-0. Never in the history of Major League Baseball had a team ever been down 3-0 and come back to win the series. And you know what? They took it to Mariano Rivera, and then Rivero, masculine, feminine, doesn't matter on this show, as we established at the beginning. They took it to Mariano, then they took it to the Yankees, then they took it all the way for the World Series 2004.
So,
boom!
So what, and then we're going to go off on a little bit of a tangent here. So what was the biggest moment? Was it the Robert stolen base? In that game?
It's all like a.
Was it so? There was the Robert stolen base.
The blown
walk.
Save is the big thing.
Yeah,
Mariano Rivera blowing a save is the thing. So you have the walk, the Millar walk, right? Mm-hmm. It was Millar that walked.
Millar,
right?
Yep.
Millar, Roberts comes in. Everyone knows he's going to steal second. He steals second. Bill Miller comes up and grounds a ball up the middle for a base hit. Tie game. That's when everything turned.
Don't
and then because I remember
believing.
I was talking to Red Sox fans when they were up, they were down 3-1, and they were like, I think they could actually come back and win this, because you're looking at the pitching lineups and you're just saying like, well, geez, we got Pedro, so that's a win, and you still got Curt Schilling, and then was it Arroyo, who at the time wasn't a giant garbage fire of awfulness, was actually a good pitcher, especially that year. And so it was like, hey, this could actually happen. And even though we, as Red Sox fans, we had gone through the year before losing in Game 7 on that stupid Aaron Boone home run, which whole Aaron Boone thing, just everything about that guy annoys me. You know what? Hashtag Aaron Boone is awful. Okay, first of all, he hits a home run off of Wakefield in 2003. Yes, they then went on to lose to the Marlins, is that?
Yes.
Right, because that was the Bartman year, right?
Mm-hmm,
okay,
yes.
So then Aaron Boone is playing basketball the next offseason, blows out his knee.
Career over.
And then Alex Rodriguez gets traded to the Yankees, which he was – the Red Sox were in the process of trading for him, had actually traded for him. And then there, he winds up on the Yankees. And look, I'm not saying the Red Sox needed to get him because Manny worked out fine, but – because that was what the trade was Manny for A-Rod, basically. But what I'm talking about is him winding up on the Yankees, which was not a good thing for Red Sox fans, because he's one of the greatest players of all time. You don't want him on the... And now Brett Boone is in the broadcast booth every freaking ESPN game with that high-pitched Keebler Elf voice. It drives me up the freaking wall. Why is that guy allowed to have people hear his voice? I don't understand.
He's the bane of your existence.
It drives me crazy. It drives me so crazy. Like, anyway.
Okay, let's keep moving since we're like 40 minutes into headlines.
Look, hey, listener, if you could go and rate our podcast, give us a nice 5 stars. Please disregard the 15 minutes of Red Sox talk and the 20 minutes of fantasy baseball chitter chatter. And keep in mind all the other great stuff we've mentioned here, minus the more Red Sox talk there. Because I think we're in up to 20 minutes of Red Sox talk. So just disregard that when you're rating us.
Yes. We're going to zoom it along so we can move to some of the fun stuff.
You know what we could do? We could skip the Are You Buying It segment this week because I'm not feeling that segment. Yeah, I'm not buying the Are You Buying It segment.
Okay. Well, we've talked about
four
of the players in it already. So
it's a waste.
So the Nationals, one of their minor league affiliates threw back-to-back no-hitters and a doubleheader.
Yeah. Now, granted, it's against the Marlins. So their minor league
speaking of dumpster fires
system leaves something to be desired, as the euphemism goes. But yeah, back-to-back no-hitters in a doubleheader. Never been done before in the history of professional baseball. It may have happened in basketball once, but that's because there are no hits ever in basketball.
That's
a little humor. That's a little sports humor for those who have been listening to Red Sox and fantasy baseball talk.
2 9-inning games?
Well, that's the other thing. They were seven-inning games because they were rookie league games. Yeah. But still, it's an impressive accomplishment.
Yeah, nonetheless. Yeah. Never been done before, so that's pretty exciting. Oh, so I was singing Don't Stop Believing a little while ago because I knew that we were going to talk about it a little bit. And apparently the Giants stopped playing that in late innings because they kind of have a tendency to lose those games.
Well, because they're basically telling everyone to stop believing.
And on top of that, they go out and bring Pablo Sandoval back. So that kind of puts that nail in the coffin.
To accentuate the point, right? It's like it's the exclamation point on the – please, please stop believing.
Yes, we've given up. The white flag, see it?
Look, this is a freight train out of control, terrible dumpster fire piece of garbage. Please, please run for your lives.
It is amazing how that franchise has gone from like a model of consistency to a complete just meltdown.
Yeah, like right now, look, they've won 3 World Series in the last 10 years. And no one will ever be able to take that away from them. But it's weird to see them because they were sort of rebuilding, but they're just missing on all their trades and their draft picks they're missing and they keep missing. And, you know, they get Christian Arroyo, a top 50 prospect. They bring him up and he can't hit the ball out of the infield. And like, oh, all right, well, maybe he isn't actually that good. And so they're missing on a lot of things. Their free agent signings, Johnny Cueto and Jeff Samardzija, oof. Those two have just stunk up the joint. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you got 3 World Series, and now you're the worst team in baseball?
Yeah.
That's kind of okay.
That's okay for a Dodgers fan.
But, I mean, it's okay, like, for a Giants fan, right? Like, aren't you kind of okay with that?
Yeah,
but not the
way it happened. Because it kind of...
I will say it's...
It wasn't
it's,
intentional.
Yeah.
That's the bigger thing, I think.
It's a little shocking.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little shocking, and they they're so bad. And they're such a terrible team. It's a little shocking. But again, as a sort of Dodger enthusiast myself, I don't mind.
There you go.
But you know what? In the last 30 years, Dodgers have one championship, and that's from 1988.
And potentially they could rectify that with one this year.
Yeah, but, you know, it's all still a crapshoot, but the Giants have theirs.
Well, the last team
you know, they trade off
Nunez.
They're starting to sell off the pieces. They're going to get even worse. That's the thing. They're going to get even worse. And will any of these, like, what are they going to get for Cueto? They can't trade Cueto. First of all, he's injured. And, like, he's not even that good anymore for whatever reason. Maybe all the quick pitch tough talk got into his head. Mm-hmm. You know, because he was getting busted up by players for doing the quick pitching. So maybe it sort of tweaked his style a little bit, or maybe he's one of the guys that's most affected by the new ball.
Could be, yeah.
Sorry, the ball that's completely the same but allows more home runs.
Right. That's been determined through statistical testing that it is a juiced ball.
That causes more blisters in pitchers and more home runs.
What's up with that?
Whatever. Yeah. That's just the same ball. No difference.
One final statistic here in headlines is that the last team to have a record as good as the Dodgers at this point in the season was the 2002 Mariners. Went on to win 116 games that season. But we know how that season ended for them. An early exit from the playoffs.
Crapshoot.
Yep, crapshoot. It's all about your pitching at the end of the season. And I think the Dodgers...
I mean, it's who gets hot. You know what I mean? It's just about who gets hot in the playoffs. You get into the playoffs and you hope that things line up and then... any situation where David Eckstein can be the MVP of a series right. tells you that, like, it's just about who gets hot.
Right. Yes, indeed. Okay, let's move on to starting nine. So that wrapped up our 50-minute headline session.
That's a long headlines.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Yeah, starting nine. Yeah, starting nine's next. So we've got nine players with Game of Thrones-ish styled. Is this a story like last time?
No. First of all, technically last week I should have done the Game of Thrones thing.
You had
right?
a great story last week. So
but the story thing I thought was cool, and that's why.
Was great.
That was... I'll try to do one of those again coming up here, especially when things get a little lullish. But I was so pleased with how that turned out, I decided to bump Game of Thrones to this week.
Very good.
So Game of Thrones, nine players or so of related to Game of Thrones players. So honorable mention to Jason Stark.
Okay.
The I would say writer for Fox, but they no longer let him write. He's only on video now. I don't know if you heard that news.
No, I didn't know about that.
Yeah, he... Fox has gone all video, no writing. So anyway, Jason Stark, the Stark family of the Game of Thrones. For those who don't know, you probably just want to skip this whole. If you don't know Stark, you just want to skip ahead 5 minutes. Okay, first off, Jon Snow, Jon Lester, right?
Okay.
Jaime Lannister. Jaime Garcia. It's a Jaime Garcia, but it's still a Jaime. It's spelled the same way.
Okay.
Varys, or shall I say Jason Vargas.
There you go. Okay.
Right?
Now we're getting there.
Varys, the spy master, I guess. He's the...
The eunuch.
The Comey. The James Comey of the Game of Thrones world, right? To some degree? I don't know. Probably not exactly that. Okay, let's not bring politics into this. Jesus, this is hard enough. Okay, Theon Sonny Greyjoy.
That's a good one.
Right? Sonny Grey. Probably going to be traded if the A's are, you know, follow through with what everyone's talking about. Here's a good one. For R.A. Dickey, I've got R. Stark. Arya Stark. Arya Dickey.
R.A. Dickey.
It's all about how you pronounce it. If you call her Arya, like most people, sure. But if you call her R.A. because you're like her friend.
Right. Yeah, that'll work.
Sam. Also, there is an R and an A in her name.
There is.
Very good. That was how I was originally going to go. Anyway. Okay, so I have Chris Davis. And for him, I have Davos.
Okay.
Seaworth, right?
Gotcha.
C, Chris. So that's why I'm using Chris with a C, not Chris with a K.
Very well done.
Right? Seaworth.
You're really thinking this through.
Yeah. This is important, John. Of course, Rugned Hodor.
There. Ding, ding, ding,
rest
ding.
In peace. Rest in peace. For Cersei Lannister, I've got Francisco Cervelli, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Check this out. Cervelli is a catcher. So it's Cersei. Cervelli? Cersei?
Okay.
That's awful. Sorry, that one's terrible. It made sense at one point, but I may have been very tired when I was doing it. This is a good... You like this one. For Daenerys Targaryen, right?
Mm-hmm.
Slayer of Dragons or Queen of the Chains or whatever she is. For Daenerys, I've got Dan Norris.
That's very good.
And last but not least, for Tyrion Lannister, I have Jose Altuve.
Well played. And I understand why you chose him.
Because he's short.
He's diminutive stature.
He's a short guy.
That was good.
He's full of spunk.
I like it. Did you catch up on Game of Thrones?
We're still holding. Because I just got back in town, and so we're...
Gotcha. So you haven't seen either of the two yet?
We haven't watched either, and it's been hard to avoid stuff on the social media. And so if I see game, anything, I just move.
Yeah.
I'm out.
Right. So let's not talk about it anymore.
Yeah.
We have a new segment, though.
Yes.
Is it just
me? Do we have time for this? Yes.
Yeah, we got to.
Yes.
Yeah.
Is it yes, just sorry. Me? I cut you off on. Yeah. I keep cutting you off on the name of it. What is it?
Go ahead. Is it just me?
Right. Okay. So this occurred to me last night. So if we had recorded last night, we wouldn't be doing the segment. But is it just me, John, or are baseball managers leaving starting pitchers in too long this season? Case in point, last night, Jameson Taillon is pitching against the San Francisco Giants. Now, this is Jameson Taillon who has ball cancer, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, that probably has nothing to do with this whole scenario, but he gave up 6 runs in the first 3 innings. Don't you take him out at that point?
Yeah, he gave up more runs than he recorded outs. That doesn't happen often.
He gave up 6 runs in the first 3 innings. So, okay, you know what? Worst case scenario, you let him go out and see if he can get like a couple of cheap outs against the bottom of the lineup. Right? No. Hit. And like, he's still in the game, John? Yeah, he's still in the game. 5 batters, 5 hits. All of them solid contact. Apparently, he had a bit of a blister problem. And the umpire, I was tracking some of the game online. The umpire was calling. Now, look, admittedly, the only reason why I'm tracking a Pirates-Giants game is because I'm in a money league and Jameson Taillon is on my team. And him giving up 9 earned runs in 3 innings, yeah, that affected the standings, Jagoff. Clint Hurdle, who I'm telling you, this guy, when I think this guy might be a good manager, he pulls something like this. Pull him out of the game. This is a young pitcher who doesn't have it tonight, my friend. Pull him out. Well, I see more and more of this season, and I know there's more home runs and whatever, right. But he wasn't giving up home runs.
Yeah, it was.
He just giving up hits.
Rockets.
Pull him out of the game. Shorten that leash. Use the bullpen. This is your best pitcher. Jameson Taillon is your best pitcher. You don't need to. What's that line they say about some pitchers when they're losing? You got to go out there and you got to wear it. Mm-hmm. I've heard that expression. Mm-hmm. Meaning whatever runs you have to get, you know, however long it takes you to get the outs to get us through this game, you're going to take it for the team.
Right. Usually that's a middle reliever.
Usually it's a middle reliever who's probably not going to be on the team by the end of the season. Not your best young starting pitcher.
But in defense of Hurdle, if this is a defense, is that Taillon said that he had great stuff in the bullpen. But when he got out to the – apparently he had a great first inning too, right? One, two, three, first inning?
Like 7 pitches in the first inning. Yeah. But here's the thing. Then there were other innings that followed.
Right, and he didn't have it after that.
And he didn't have it. And you know what? Clint Hurdle still has eyeballs.
Right, and Taillon said that he goes, you know, I wasn't getting the bite that I was having in the bullpen on my slider, and I was elevating pitches, therefore they were hitting them. It's like, right. Good that you figured that out, but then why didn't you fix it? You know,
well, here's the thing. He was throwing balls low in the zone, and the umpire was not calling them strikes.
So he started bringing it up.
If you saw them on the strike zone thing, they were in that area where it's like most umpires would probably have called those strikes. Like they're technically in the zone. But you know, sinkers are a little bit of an optical illusion.
Right.
So
where they cross the plate.
But sometimes an umpire has a bad night. And in this case, I mean, there was a ball. I don't want to say it was right down the middle of the plate, but there was a ball Taillon threw that was maybe 5 inches off the middle of the plate, up and to the inside. Maybe less than that, maybe for like 4 inches. But that's pretty much down the middle of the plate, mm-hmm. called for a ball.
Yeah, I saw that happen in last night's Mariners game. Mike Zunino walked when there was a ball that was clearly in the upper third quadrant. I mean, it was in by 4 or 5
robots,
inches,
John.
Top and side. What?
Robots.
Robots. Down the road.
I think pinball, you do a robot-human hybrid. That's what I think. Not that you actually make a cyborg out there, but you create a thing where, like, the umpire gets a notification if it's clearly a ball or clearly a strike, mm-hmm. and then you allow for sort of a gray area around the edge of the zone. Mm-hmm. And those are the judgment calls by umpires. So that if they call it wrong, they're not so wrong that it's like, how could you pot? Like, it's down the middle of the plate, dude. That's a strike.
Right.
Anyway, so this segment, is it just me? I'm concerned about the number of pitchers giving up. I saw someone on Twitter call it a quality shart. So instead of a quality start, which is six innings pitched
that's brilliant.
And three earned runs, it's a quality start, which is six innings pitched and six earned runs. Which is bad for the team because you're probably going to lose, and it's bad for fantasy baseball because you're going to wreck your ratios and stuff. And again, I don't mind if you stick that on like some veteran, you know, whatever. But like, this is a young pitcher. Like, Ahmed Rosario needs to stay out of the clubhouse because he might get affected by the toxic clubhouse chemistry. But this is okay. Now, that's sort of a weird equivalence. Because, first of all, we don't know if that Mets story is even true. Second of all, what does the Mets and Rosario have to do with Jameson Taillon? What it has to do with is I'm angry because it affects my fantasy baseball team. And I will say, it's not satisfying when it happens to an opponent in fantasy baseball.
Mm-hmm.
It's not satisfying for me. Like, I like watching good games, and this is not good. Good baseball is not letting a young guy sit out there and take his lumps because, you know, he says he has good stuff, or he had good stuff in the bullpen, or whatever. Like, the guy doesn't, like, unless everyone's injured, you don't stick it on this guy. Mm-hmm. And that's a problem that I have in the league.
I don't think it's just you.
Okay, good.
So let's move on to extra innings.
We did it. Cutting out the Are You Buying It, which I think was a weak episode.
But we talked, this like, week. Mentioned, like I said.
Again, we did talk so about these guys, good.
Yeah. Extra innings, looking at what's going on outside of the baseball world. Let's start off with a little bit of golf and an amazing back nine on the final day of the British Open.
Yes. This is what I know about this event. This is Jordan Spieth.
Mm-hmm.
Is on Sunday, John Sumple posted on Facebook, Jordan Spieth, are you kidding me?
I knew that was a reference to me.
And I would like John to explain, Jordan Spieth, are you kidding me? Because I have no idea.
Okay, Jordan Spieth, are you kidding me? Jordan Spieth dominated, when I say dominated, but was in control of the tournament for through the first three rounds. Front nine, the final day, he kind of blows up a little bit. Instead of a three-shot lead, he's now one shot down. Specifically after took him 25 minutes to play, I think it was the 12th hole. And because he hit a ball so far right that he had to take an unplayable lie or line of sight lie in the driving range fairway. So hits an amazing shot, gets a bogey. He's down a stroke now instead of being up three. And then he proceeds to hit a birdie, then a eagle, and then another birdie, and then another birdie to finish out his back nine, which was pretty phenomenal way to stamp his name on the trophy. So it was pretty amazing to watch happen that way because he was unraveling. And if you're a fan of golf, and I know you're not.
Well, I will say, John, I'm not a fan of golf, but certainly listening to it is worse than watching it. But all that said, this is all still better than soccer. So go on. So
Jordan Spieth, are you kidding me? There you have it.
Well, good for him. And is he good in general, or is this like sort of out of nowhere?
Well, he is now the second youngest player to win three of the four Grand Slam legs in golf. The only player who's done it who was younger than him is Jack Nicklaus. And the player right behind him is Tiger Woods.
Oh, that doesn't bode well for Jordan Spieth now, does it? Stay away from the Swedish wives.
Right. He's, he's...
And the painkillers.
23 years old. I think he's going to be 24 this week. So he, 2 weeks from now or week and a half from now, or I guess next week, starts the PGA, which is the fourth Grand Slam of the year. And if he wins that and gets the career Grand Slam, he will be the youngest player to do that. So it'll be
interesting.
You may even want to watch the PGA, tournament next weekend.
But I mean, either way, like every year now, or for the next few years till he wins, because it sounds like he's the kind of guy that will eventually win that.
Yes.
If you've won three out of four by that age, you're probably going to win it at some point. So every year now, it's sort of a thing to watch. Look, mm-hmm. I'm not going to pretend like I'm suddenly a golf fan, but I do like stories like this. I remember growing up and hearing the Tiger Woods stuff. I hated golf, but Tiger Woods completely changed how people thought about golf. Then, of course, Happy Gilmore came along, and that completely changed how everyone enjoyed golf.
Right.
One of the all-time greats, Happy Gilmore. Not all-time great films, but just all-time great soccer. golf.
Is there such a thing?
Golfers in fiction, one of the all-time great fictional golfers.
Yes.
Anyway, good for Jordan.
So let's get into a little bit of NBA stuff where the prima donnas rule. So Kyrie Irving apparently doesn't want to play with LeBron James anymore because he wants to be the guy.
Well, also, to be clear, he wants to get traded out of Cleveland, and one could hardly blame a human for wanting to be out of Cleveland.
Although LeBron wanted back in.
Yeah, but he wanted in just to get the title. Sport
that somebody wanted
just to fix that big mistake. I know. It's the first time in the history of everything that someone wanted to go back to Cleveland.
And I, since I've known you, and that's going back 7 years, you have been ripping on Cleveland every chance you get. So I think one of the first articles you wrote was a ripping of Cleveland. And I think that was before the Facebook commenting era, and you got quite a bit of feedback in comments after that post went up on through the Facebook.
Yeah, I think
Facebook.
It was, sorry, Cleveland, God still hates you.
Right, that was it.
Yeah, because the team was doing well, but it was sort of the one of those, like the Twins this year, where like the numbers didn't sustain it. And sure enough, the team sort of fell apart as the season went along. Yeah, look, hey, I like picking on the crippled kid as much as the next guy. God bless Cleveland for all they've given the rest of the United States in terms of humor and feeling better about everything else in one's life.
Yeah,
it's an invaluable service that Cleveland provides.
Right, and when your city nickname is the Mistake on the Lake, you don't have a lot going for you there.
When your river and lake catch fire. I'm telling you,
yeah, that's not a good sign.
Kyrie Irving wanting to leave. Look, yes, NBA is full of prima donnas. It is the most player oriented league. There are less players. There's more money now per player than you're going to find anywhere else. And there's so much money in the league and blah, blah, blah. And so all the players have so much more power, and they prove with LeBron that you can just start going wherever you want and demanding trades and blah, blah, blah. Sure. Who cares where he winds up? But he wants to go be the guy, right? Though if he sticks around in Cleveland another year, he'll be the guy next year.
Right. Yeah, which so, to me.
But again, that would necessitate him sticking around in Cleveland.
Right. So enough is enough. I'm done.
One can only have so much suffering.
Goodbye, Cleveland.
Yeah. What else we got?
We've got, I didn't watch it this week's Shark Week, and I know there was huge hype going into the Michael Phelps racing.
For Jameson Taillon, it was Shark Week.
Sure. Hopefully that, you know, and if that happens again to another Pirates pitcher, it will be definitely Shark Week for the Pirates too.
Well, with hurdle running things.
So I heard all this hype a couple of weeks ago that he was going to be racing a great white, and apparently it wasn't a great white. It was a mechanical shark. So what's up with that?
Yeah. First of all, this is what I want to see is humans racing actual sharks. That's what I want to see.
In the open ocean. That would be awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, you could provide some sort of protection. Sure, I don't mind.
No protection.
No, some protection, John.
I say that we put convicts in the ocean with sharks and see what happens.
And if they live, then they get their freedom?
Right, that would be awesome. It's kind of like...
So it's a little like... It's like Swimming Man.
Yeah.
Instead of Running Man.
Why not?
Who loves you and who do you love? It's John Sumples, Swimming Man.
That would be fun. No offense to the convicts, but it would make for interesting television.
No offense to the sharks, John.
Yeah, the sharks are like, we want Michael Phelpsian folks, not the dregs of society. So I didn't see it. I don't know who won. I'm assuming the shark won.
The shark won. Yeah. The shark won. Yeah. So because the shark wasn't distracted by the human that it would have stopped to eat.
Right.
Which then Phelps would have won. Except for being eaten alive by a shark.
Right. He would have gone down in history.
Of course, I think we all would have won if Michael Phelps was eaten by a shark.
Ooh.
Well, it's like Michael Phelps being eaten by a shark. That's like a normal person eating a pot brownie. No? You know, my mind works weird ways sometimes. That made sense when I was thinking it, and then it started coming out of my mouth, and I was like, Jed, I think you need to stop talking. And it all came out.
But it was still funny. It made me laugh.
It was funny enough, I guess. Anyway, yeah, so I don't know. Do we need more shark? The thing is, like, I want people racing things that they can't win and has a chance of killing them. That's what I want.
Same here.
Give me cheetahs.
Cheetahs would be good. Yeah. You know, and give them a head start. See if they could, you know, give them a 50-yard head start and see if they can reach a cage or some sort of safe zone.
Don't they have that at baseball stadiums that sprinting guy?
Yeah. I just saw that for the first time this week, and some guy thinks he's going to cross the finish line, and then the sprinting guy blows right by him. And
yeah, what's his name? It's
I don't know. What baseball park is that in? I saw it for the first time earlier this week.
Yeah, it's and then I think they actually had him go up against the Freeze. That's what he's called. The Freeze. Yeah, and like invariably someone falls as they're doing it, and it's hilarious and it's great, you know, entertainment. I mean, frankly, this all goes back to Spain's running of the bulls. It's all ripping off that sort of thing. But this is what we need. We need more human-animal competitions.
Yes.
You know, we switched from boxing to MMA. Yes, it's a slippery slope because now I want to see a man fight a grizzly bear. MMA is not enough. Seeing two humans try to crush each other alive and permanently disfigure and maim is not enough. I want some of that grizzly action. I want some of that Revenant.
So back in the Coliseum days, you'd be all in on that. You'd be, sign me up, I'm in.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. It's one of the best parts of Game of Thrones is when they're like, hey, let's let these people fight to the death. Yeah. That's what they want to do. Wait, they want to do it? Okay, then yes.
Yeah, they had that one scene with Brian was thrown into the bear pit. He's supposed to fight a
bear. That's what I'm talking about.
That's great.
Yeah. Let's see more of that. Sharks, bears,
cheetahs.
Hey, look, you want to throw in every now and then like something docile like a chicken, you know? Maybe it's random. Maybe it's like here's what you're going up against.
The boa constrictor pit. The python pit.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, that'd be good.
That would be a sports program I would watch. Though I'm not sure like how you would have it as sports. But you know what? MMA is a thing. So figure it out, ESPN 3.
The Ocho. ESPN.
Yes, the Ocho. Exactly.
Last but not least, we've got Jennifer Lopez celebrates birthday with A-Rod in a sexy see-through dress. What's that all about?
John, why is A-Rod wearing a sexy see-through dress?
That works. I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. A-Rod, although he has been known to kiss himself naked in a mirror.
Those are some of the sexiest photos I've ever seen.
And he also has a painting of him as a minotaur, right? Or one of those half-man, half-horse things.
Yes.
Not minotaur, whatever it's called.
Centaur,
right? Yeah.
Yeah. That is one of the greatest pieces of art of the 21st century. Maybe even the 22nd century. Google it.
Stand
Google
for the
it,
test
listeners.
Of time. So, how long do you give J-Lo and A-Rod?
Oh, are we going to talk about this some more? Oh, I don't know.
Oh, we don't have
to. As long as either considers it valuable to their careers.
Okay, so that's enough. We don't need to talk about them anymore because they're, in my opinion, they're both kind of irrelevant.
Okay. I mean, God bless them both. Good luck to all bands, as I say. Good luck to all bands, no matter how terrible they are.
And that should do it then, right? We're done?
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll talk next week.